Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of the Providence Journal's College Basketball Podcast. This is Bill Koch, sports writer for the Journal, here in our downtown studios on a lovely Tuesday morning here in Providence. I am joined by my co-conspirator for this episode, the sports director at WPRI 12 and Fox Providence, Maury Hirschgordon. Maury, how are we doing?
Bill, doing well. Thanksgiving was great. A lot of family time, a lot different than last year. Was able to get sort of some of the extended family together and make it seem like a normal holiday for once.
Happy to hear that. It was a good one for me as well. Would also like to wish you and yours a happy and peaceful Hanukkah season.
Thank you.
As well. I remember being a kid thinking that the concept of presents 8 days in a row was one of the coolest things I'd ever heard in my life.
Oh, it was. And it was until I was about, you know, maybe a young teenager.
And then
mom and dad were like, we don't do 8 straight days of presents anymore. Maybe one present, you know, every other day or something like that. But yeah, no, it's great. When you're young, you know, you open up presents every day for a whole week. I mean, it's the best.
Fantasy versus reality, I guess. My impression of it was a little more romanticized, perhaps.
Exactly.
But I was in for it. I was like, wait, Christmas, we get presents one day. But more than a week of presents? Like, this is the greatest thing I've ever heard. Okay. So I guess maybe I wasn't missing out too much.
No, not at all. I mean, Christmas Day, you still get a ton of presents.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I'm sort of starting to learn sort of the Christmas vibes with my girlfriend who celebrates Christmas, and it's definitely a special morning, special day for people that celebrate. But you know, always got to remember the tribe and from where I'm from.
If you do the Italian version, like my side of the family does, you have the big fish dinner the night before on Christmas Eve as well.
Oh, wow!
You know, it's like a 36-hour period of gluttony and tributes to American excess generally.
Yep.
Not so bad. You know, and that will be here before you know it. Actually, we're less than a month away from my big holiday, which is hard to believe. 2021's almost gone.
Wild.
And that means that we are in the thick of college basketball season. If we're talking about Hanukkah and Christmas and the new year, we are 3 weeks in as of today. You know, we're going to start today with the Friars, Maury. You know, and we're going to start with a special occasion for Providence. 200 wins for Ed Cooley with the Friars, an 85-71 victory over St. Peter's on Saturday to give the coach his milestone. You know, he's been here. This is his 11th season. Only two other coaches in PC history have reached 200 wins. That's Joe Mullaney and Dave Gavitt, two legends in the program. You know, and as I wrote for Tuesday's Journal, and this is a column that's been online for a couple days now, I wanted to talk a little bit more about the story than the actual basketball here. I think you could look at Ed's wins and losses and what he's done at Providence, the NCAA tournaments, and the Big East Tournament Championship, obviously, and you know, some of the seasons that he's had there, some of the players he's developed. But I wanted to focus a little bit more on Ed's story and just the unlikeliness of this. You know, Providence native from a tough background, you know, somebody who was an All-State player at Central, you know, went to a prep school, went to Stonehill, was an assistant coach, first black head coach at Fairfield and at Providence. And the way I phrased it in my column was that any of those things independently would be an outstanding achievement. Ed's done all of them. I think he is remarkable. I think his story is remarkable. I think the notion of possibility that he presents to the community in Providence is a wonderful thing, and I think sometimes it's not that we should talk about that every day or every game or every week, but I think sometimes we might lose some sight of that, lose some perspective of that while we're so wrapped up in the basketball and the results.
Oh, for sure. You get so caught up in wins and losses and trends, and you're looking at bracketology, and it doesn't matter how early it is. You're always looking to see if the team can reach March Madness, and it is good once in a while to take a step back. Take a step back and look at the path that Ed Cooley's been on his entire life, and it is nothing short of remarkable, incredible. Just for somebody who didn't grow up around here, it's an incredible story. Just to learn about, you know, what Ed Cooley went through and in his childhood, and to beat, you know, pretty much all odds, because, you know, his story is not one that we get to tell every day, and to be a part of it, to have a little bit of a working relationship with Ed and know him just a little bit, you know, below the surface, a little bit more than the casual fan does. He's an incredible person, and what he's done for the college, what he's done for his city, and what he's done for his family and friends to be such a great role model in the place he grew up in. It's mind-boggling when you really try to put it into words.
Yeah, the thought of Ed Cooley being one of the faces of Providence, of the school, of the athletic department, of the city, really. You know, and the fact that he's functioned in that role essentially for more than a decade now. You know, it is staggering to think of his emergence. You know, the fact that he has this position. You know, how much he's changed his life and his family's lives. You know, and what he's been able to do through basketball in that way. You know, I just think it was a perfect occasion to highlight that. The fact that he does reach a milestone with 200 wins, as I said, a relatively easy victory over St. Peter's, a game where Providence shot the ball really well, still a few too many turnovers, but 64% from the field, you're never going to turn that down. Noah Horkler was 9 for 10 from the floor, made his first 9 shots, had 25 points, that's his most as a Friar, had his fourth double-double with Providence. He was really good in this game. You know, they did to St. Peter's essentially what you would hope they do. You know, it was tight in the first half. They pulled away in the second half. Took care of business after splitting at the Legends Classic. You beat Northwestern, and then you lose to Virginia in Newark. Virginia produced one of the best defensive efforts against Providence in Cooley's tenure. You know, so Maury, I just wonder, you know, 30,000-foot view, where you see Providence after 7 games going into a very difficult matchup Wednesday night with Texas Tech.
I think this is the team that we expected them to be so far. You know, they got a shorthanded Wisconsin team a few weeks ago there without Johnny Davis, but that win will continue to get better as the season progresses. Wisconsin then went up and won the Maui Classic. And I think what they did, you know, at the Legends Classic was fine. I think it was fine. It was passable. I think a tighter game versus Virginia for a full 40 minutes might have given you a little bit more hope, a little bit more upside. But that's what Virginia does to teams. They only gave up 40 points to Providence, and it was a struggle. Whether you look at it the box score, whether you watch it on TV, you know, any way you slice it, it was a major struggle for the Friars, even despite cutting it to 6 on that Bryson Goodine 3 there in the second half that you know, gave Providence a glimmer of hope. But really, the game was never really winnable on the Providence side. So I think after 7 games, I think they're right where we thought they were. However, going forward, this is the biggest week in the non-conference stretch.
Yes.
Without a doubt.
Yes.
No question. You have Texas Tech on Wednesday. You have URI on Saturday. And these are two games that if we think PC is the team that can compete come March, you have to win both. A, you're at home. B, Texas Tech has lost a lot in the last couple years.
Mm-hmm.
C, you're more talented on paper than URI.
Mm-hmm.
And you're at home, and it's a rivalry game, and you got to take care of your home court. So I think right now PC's where, you know, they thought they should be. Still a couple things, though, that are interesting when you look at individually players and not performing, you know, to their capability . A player like an A.J. Reeves continues to struggle. And I just think the ceiling lowers for this Providence team as you rely more on big men versus wing players and guards. And Al Durham's been great. And Noah Horkler's been great, and Nate Watson's been great. But you need contributions from A.J. Reeves. You need contributions, some more offensive contributions from a player like Justin Minaya. And we can get deeper and deeper into that. But I think at 6-1, I think the Friars are okay right now.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Virginia, and obviously the way to beat them is to hit three-pointers. They don't let you get to the rim. They're not necessarily going to let you get anything easy inside. Providence 3-for-22 in that game. They made all their threes the night before against Northwestern, where they were really good from beyond the arc at Prudential Center. You know, you mentioned Texas Tech, and we'll take a brief look at them. Obviously, a new coach, Mark Adams, former assistant to Chris Beard. Texas Tech is 6-0. Haven't really played anyone yet, but if you look at the metrics on KenPom, it's pretty much what you would expect them to be. It's who they were under Beard, you know, really good defensively, 5th in the nation in turnover percentage, you know, offensive rebounding, number 1 in the nation. They grabbed 49% of their misses. So you're looking at a team that is really physical, that's going to get after you on the defensive end, going to be really aggressive in that way. A very different style to Virginia, who more sort of lures you in, encourages you to try to attack them. They guard the ball really hard, you know, and sort of make it difficult for you to penetrate in any way. That's the principle of the pack line defense. Texas Tech is going to be in your shorts. From the time that you get over half court, they're going to be all over you, oppressive, you know, in their defensive philosophy. So, you know, it'll be an interesting challenge for Providence, particularly it looks like they could be without Jared Bynum in this game. You know, suffered a right foot slash ankle injury against St. Peter's. He went down under the basket midway through the first half, did not return, came back to the bench in a walking boot. I know he was due for an MRI and an x-ray on Monday. The way he was moving, Morey, I'd be very surprised if he's out there, frankly, Wednesday or really anytime soon. You know, so that's going to put a lot of pressure on Al Durham, on Alan Breed. You hope that you get Justin Manaya and Bryson Goodine back. They missed St. Peter's game due to illness. Providence is going to need all the ball handling options that they can muster to deal with the Red Raiders.
Yeah, I don't think the loss of Bynum, if he doesn't play, is that big of a deal, quite honestly. I think you have a player in Alan Breed who gives you a lot more positives than Bynum does out on the floor. He's a scoring threat. The defense has to respect him outside of the three. And I know that, you know, Bynum did hit a couple shots there, you know, earlier in non-conference play against Northwestern a couple games ago, when he had those flurry of threes early in the first half and was scoring for you. But I really think Alan Breed gives you more upside than Jared Bynum. I think Al Durham is more than fine at the point guard position. I think he's not a true point guard, or he's more of a point guard in today's day and age where he can go out and get you buckets. I think Jared Bynum is a little bit more of an old school point guard, and I think the way that Providence hits ruts at times and can't make shots, it's better almost that Jared Bynum's not on the floor because it gives you another score. Alan Breed and Al Durham in your backcourt, I think, gives you more scoring potential than it does if it's Durham and Bynum, or if it's Breed and Bynum, because Bynum is just so much more inconsistent than the other two. So I think Providence, you get another scorer out on the floor, somebody who can score a little bit more on the court without Bynum. And then, you know, Bryson Goodine's given them a good lift. So maybe without Bynum on the court, slides Bryson Goodine up one spot on the depth chart, and he's off the bench a little bit quicker. So I think it's no problem that Jared Bynum won't play. I think I still expect Providence to win this game. One thing on Texas Tech, if you like the NCAA tournament, Kevin O'Banner, who played on that Oral Roberts team, who upset Ohio State, and then they upset Florida. Is that, if my memory serves?
I think that's correct.
It was Florida. They went to the Sweet 16 as a 15 seed. So he was their big man, along with their guard, Max Asmus, for Oral Roberts last year. He transferred and has had a decent start to the season for Texas Tech. So if you like March Madness hoops, you'll see a familiar face there. Marco Santos Silva,
Taunton native.
The Taunton native.
Coming home.
Also plays for the Red Raiders. So those are a few faces that you might be familiar with when you see Texas Tech. Because other than that, it's not often that Texas Tech makes its way up to the dunk.
No, not at all. Certainly not. Morey, excellent recall, by the way, on the NCAA tournament last year. Oral Roberts, a 15 seed, beat Ohio State in overtime, beat Florida, lost to Arkansas by 2. You know, really gave those three teams all they could handle. You know, obviously, a couple other names you're looking at Texas Tech. Terrence Shannon, who's an NBA prospect, wasn't cleared for the first few games. The Red Raiders compliance department wanted to make sure that he would be eligible to play. He is back. He has started the last three games. 6'6", wing guy, physical, can really score it. Small sample, but he's shooting 50% from three. Early, you know, could be an all Big 12 type player, you know, guy who you will see at minimum in the G League in the future. You know, just a very physically representative roster, what you would expect out of a Power 5 conference. You've got length, you've got strong guys inside, you know, athletic guards will be the best physical challenge that Providence has played in terms of teams on paper. So far, they are more impressive in that way if you put them through a draft combine, let's say, than Virginia, than Northwestern. You know, so that's obviously a major test for the Friars. On Wednesday night, Texas Tech will be short favorites. That's at 8:30 on Fox Sports 1. for folks who want to tune in. That should be a fun one for sure. Wednesday night, we also have URI going to Harvard, you know, finishing off a, well, actually, did they sign a four-game series? I think they may have. But this is the second part of a home-and-home series. There was a walk-off jump shot by Fats Russell earlier on at the Ryan Center. And now URI heads up to face the Crimson. You know, coming off a win on Saturday against Georgia State, 94-59, a very shorthanded Georgia State, only seven scholarship players, had two walk-ons with them as well. They had a COVID-19 exposure, and according to Stadium and Jeff Goodman, up to five players who are unvaccinated who could not make the trip. And honestly, Maury, this was a situation where I wanted URI to win by 1,000. I don't normally root for the teams that I cover, you know, but I think at this point, we're 9 months into this with vaccines. We are 20-plus months into the pandemic. Yep. If you don't care enough about me or your teammates or your coaches or your fellow students on campus to do your part and get vaccinated, sorry. Hope you lose by 80.
Yeah.
Every single game. And you need to look your teammates in the face and say, hey, man, sorry about that.
Yep.
I subjected you to a horrible beating because I don't want to get the shot.
Yep.
Isn't that nice?
It is. It is.
Isn't that nice?
It's a great gift to give your teammates.
Great. Lovely.
Come up to Rhode Island from Georgia and lose by 40.
You know,
almost 40.
Break the huddle, 1-2-3 family, right?
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly.
You know, URI finding it's 3 point enough with my my vaccine rant. It's over. You folks can fast forward over that and get to the basketball. But I won't apologize for it. URI in this game shot the three like they never have before under David Cox. 15 makes is the most in his tenure, the most that they have made since late in the 2016-17 season against St. Joe's in a blowout win at home. That was a 30-point win over the Hawks. That was before URI's 9-game winning streak that gave them an A-10 title, put them into the NCAA tournament, put them a couple minutes away from upsetting Oregon and going to the Sweet 16, the first of Dan Hurley's two NCAA tournament teams. That was not a great shooting team either. They just happened to have a hot night and make 16 threes at the Ryan Center. I look at this box score, Maury, and I think the two biggest takeaways are that the two guys that you expected to lead, Jeremy Shepard and Ish Leggett, did so, and both found their touch from deep. Shepard, 21 points, 5 for 8 from 3. Leggett, 20 points, 5 for 7 from 3. Leggett's performance comes after getting shut out at Florida Gulf Coast in a really bad loss. So to see him bounce back in that way, I think was really important for Rhode Island as they go into what's going to be a challenging week on their schedule, obviously, with Harvard and with Providence both on the road.
Yeah, this was the get-right game for Rhode Island. And it's good to see them, you know, see the ball go through the hoop, see 15, you know, threes come in, and they shot 53% from the floor overall. This was, you know, you sort of, if you want to draw a parallel, maybe, you know, the Patriots lost that tight game at home against the Cowboys, and then they come out and they rip the Jets. And this is, you know, this was the ripping that URI did. You know, they lose that tough game at Florida Gulf Coast, a game they probably should have won. But you put that in the rearview mirror, you come home, you know, you enjoy Thanksgiving with your team, and then you come out and you deliver a big win in a 94-59 win over Georgia State. And now, you know, you have, much like Providence, again, your biggest out-of-conference week of your slate. You've got Harvard on Wednesday, and that's a program that's been to the NCAA tournament, that's won a lot of games, that has a great coach, that has a great culture. Year in and year out, regardless of the names, they play for the name on the front of the jersey. They play a really smart brand of basketball that's obviously, you know, across the board, primarily in the Ivy League. But Tommy Amaker has such a firm grasp on his program that regardless of when you play Harvard, where you play Harvard, you know, they're always going to give you a really good game. And this is a really good test, a really good tune-up to see if Rhode Island has made strides. You know, the turnover issues continue to be a problem, as we've seen early on in the season. It was an issue last year. It's sort of been an issue throughout David Cox's tenure as a coach at Rhode Island. Well, now you're going to go to Harvard, and they're gonna guard you. They're going to be in your face. They're not going to be as tough as Texas Tech, but they're going to be smart about how they guard positionally. So can URI take care of the basketball? That's going to be one thing I'm going to look at. Can they take care of the basketball? It's especially important on the road. It's especially important against a program like Harvard. And then can you execute and can you make shots? You're going to be more athletic than Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about that. But now, can you make sure it turns into baskets, and you can you make sure you defend on the other end without fouling, and can you limit Harvard on the offensive glass? And I think this is a really good test for Rhodey. And then, you know, two games that are away from home, but they're not too far of trips, so you're not hopping on a plane. You're just going to hop on a bus for 45 minutes to an hour both ways. You're going to go north to Cambridge on Wednesday. You're going to go south. North both times, actually. North to Cambridge and then north to Providence. The trip to Harvard's obviously a little bit longer, but I think, you know, this is definitely a game that Rhode Island can win, and I think a game that Rhode Island should win if we think that they can crack the top five in the A-10 based on how volatile the league has been.
Yep. Rhode Island's a short favorite in this game, according to Ken Pom, 4 or 5 points, give or take. Harvard comes in 5-2, an overtime loss to Iona, and a three-point road loss to Siena. They had a nice home win over Colgate in overtime. Colgate's had a couple good results early with old friend Keegan Records, a South Kingston native. Harvard does three things particularly well. They keep you off the offensive glass. They're a top 50 team in terms of limiting your offensive rebounding. They shoot the three very well. They're over 40%. That's top 20 mark in the country. And you mentioned their defense, steal percentage. They take it away on 12.8% of your possessions. That's 31st in the nation. So you need to mind the ball when you're playing against them. They're going to try to play at a pretty good pace. Chris Ledlam was the Ivy League Player of the Week this week. You know, wing player, 6'6", can score it a little bit, can shoot it a little bit. Noah Kirkwood's a physical guy inside. You're going to see him up front. You know, someone who's very active defensively. You know, this is a team, Maury, that you know, as you said, Tommy Amaker's been there a long time. He has recruited at a different level than maybe the Ivy League has seen before, you know, sort of forced Yale and Penn and Princeton and Brown to sort of ramp it up in that way. You know, you didn't necessarily see the Ivy League landing top 100 prospects before Tommy Amaker's getting the Bryce Akins of the world, you know, and selling the 4 years for your next 40. Oh, and by the way, you'll also have a chance to play pro here. You know, it's a very attractive pitch that he's made. And he's built a very good program there. You know, I like the fact that URI is playing that sort of regional game. I think it's good that you challenge yourself with the Harvards of the world. You know, if you happen to schedule Northeastern in a year where they're good, you know, Bill Cohen's done a great job there for a long time. You know, I think that those are games that make a lot of sense for you, non-conference. I think you find out much more about your team going on the road to Harvard than maybe, you know, buying Maine and having them come to the Ryan Center and you beat them by 20 and send them home with a check. You know, I think that it's a good test ahead of going to Providence, and I think it's a chance to put into practice what you've already done against Georgia State, whether or not you can carry some of those things forward.
I would really like to see more Antoine Walker. This is a guy that leads your team in field goal percentage, over 70% from the floor,
mm-hmm.
shooting 62% from three, small sample size, but still making one of two that he's shooting per game. He is second on the team in defensive rating, and his per 40 stats, if you look at it, are just filthy. I mean, the last three games are just the latest example. 15 points in 17 minutes against Boston College, 13 points in 18 minutes against Florida Gulf Coast, and 13 points in 23 minutes against Georgia State. 23 minutes against Georgia State, the highest of the season so far, so hopefully that's trending in the right direction. But we need to see more of Antoine Walker, especially in a game like Harvard where the Ivy League isn't known to have, you know, great, great big men, big, big men that maybe he can't match up with physically. He can out-jump a lot of bigs in the Ivy League, if they're even a little bit bigger, not usually as athletic. This is a guy, though, that's getting it done, you know, rebounding the ball. He can pass the ball a little bit. He's smart. He's probably one of the guys with the highest IQ on the team. He's been around college basketball long enough. I know I sort of beat this last year when I asked David Cox about, you know, what happened in that UMass game when he, you know, went off in the first half, yet still only played 9 minutes, and
right.
And we sort of got some blowback there, but it was a valid question with stats to back it up. And here the stats are again, Bill. You know, I really want to see Antoine Walker be out on the court more. Sure, maybe against Providence come Saturday, and we'll get into this in the next episode a little bit more, so here's your teaser. But I don't know if maybe Noah Horkler and Nate Watson are the best matchup for Antoine Walker because they're bigger and they are so much more athletic than guys you're going to face on Harvard. So that's where maybe you need the Twin Towers to come in a little bit more in the Mitchell Twins. But a game like Harvard, you have to look at the matchups and you have to see that this kid is producing. And he's the most efficient player on your team, and it's not even close. So whether it's – I'm not even going to ask to put him in the starting lineup right now. He's just got to get more than – the 17, 18, 19 minutes a game he's averaging.
Okay, so now we get into a bit of a philosophical discussion about how URI wants to play, and I think some of this goes into recruiting as well.
It does.
You know, and it gets into conversations that you have while you're recruiting players that we never hear about, yeah, obviously, but that you can infer based on playing time and based on roles certain conversations took place. URI has been a three-guard team essentially since Dan Hurley came here. David Cox has carried that forward. So if you're looking at URI right now as a three-guard team, you have Shepard, Leggett, and Ish El Amin pretty much locked into the starting lineup.
Yep.
Antoine Walker's not going to put any one of them on the bench.
Right, I'm not expecting that. Yep.
You have the Mitchell Twins down low. The Mitchell Twins are transferring from Maryland. They're both four-star recruits. Mekhi's in the top 100. McHale's in the top 200. They've referred to McHale as their defensive anchor. He's an all-defensive A-10 player. Mekhi, I think, probably has the highest upside on their team in terms of could he be a pro at some point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the discussion with the Mitchell Twins when they were looking to leave Maryland was come here, one of you will start, and one of you might come off the bench if Antoine's better. I find that very hard to believe. I don't think they came here to come off the bench. I don't think they came here to play 20 minutes a game. I think they came here to be centerpiece players in this program. And so, if you're at that point, regardless of production, regardless of what Antoine Walker is giving you, I think you're pot committed in poker parlance. I think we saw that over the last couple of years with Jermaine Harris. I think when they got Jermaine Harris, I think part of the deal was, Jermaine, you're a four-star recruit, a top 80 guy. You come here, you start from day one. No matter how good or bad you are, you're going to start and get all the opportunities that we can give you. He started every game, you know, until it got deeper and deeper into his career, and it got to a point where obviously it was untenable. But you could go back and say, did starting Jermaine Harris every game cost you Jacob Toppin at some point 2 years ago? Was Jacob Toppin watching this and thinking, I'm better than this guy. Why am I sitting? He's not productive. You know, why? Like, what's going on here? Why am I not playing the four next to Cyril Langevine? Like, why? I'm a better player. There is more to running a program than just statistics, more than just performance on the floor. And I think, and we haven't had these conversations, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes at URI. This is just trying to put the pieces together circumstantially. I think there are larger conversations to be had there than just putting Antoine Walker on the floor for 30 minutes.
Sure. No, I know. And I 100% agree. However, with the season that URI is coming off of, winning has to be at the forefront.
Sure.
Winning will cure everything.
Guys
will want to stay here if you're winning.
I don't disagree with anything that you said for the record.
No, nothing. I know. No, and it's great conversation here. And I'm not going to sit here and just, you know, just talk about the stats. But at some point, the proof is in the pudding, and when he's your most efficient player on the floor, you have to find a way to get him out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a guy like Ish El Amin, who only attempts a few shots a game, if he doesn't have it early, maybe you pull him and he's your third guard that you play a lot. Sure, he's getting the starting nod, but then you go just six or seven players deep. Maybe that means a little less time for Malik Martin. Sure. Was he efficient against Georgia State? Yes. Has he had good games in his career so far in the short time he's been at Rhode Island? Yes. But then there's just got to be a way to get him out on the floor. He's going to bridge that gap between the guards and the forwards. Antoine Walker could probably guard 2 through 4. And if defensive identity, 2 through 5 even, if Antoine Walker can do so much more on the defensive end than a lot of other guys can, and he takes the right types of shots most of the time on the floor, inside the paint, maybe one or two from deep, I think he just gives your team so much more versatility when he's out on the court. And it just goes back to winning. It goes back to the season that David Cox just had. It goes back to he wants to stay here. He wants to earn another contract. And if he wants to win, he's got to play the player that right now has been his best from start to finish.
For folks who ever wanted to get into coaching, you think it's easy? I mean, what we're talking about right now, I guarantee you those conversations go on in the URI offices for about 12 hours a day. What's our best lineup? What's our most efficient lineup? How can we defend and score? What's the balance? What takes away from what? You know, it's fascinating conversations that these guys have behind the scenes. They don't just show up in a tracksuit and coach on a game night, you know, or run their guys through a few drills at practice. You know, these are major decisions that they have to make in terms of lineups and whatever else. You know, and we sort of see them take place out on the floor. You know, win or lose, we get to parse those after the fact. They are making them in real time. So URI goes to Harvard on Wednesday night, and then they will go to Providence on Saturday. We will talk more at length about Rams and Friars because, quite frankly, it deserves more. You know, Maury, we will go to Bryant next. The Bulldogs coming off an overtime loss at home against Dartmouth on Sunday. I happen to be there at Chase Center for the 63-61 defeat. Maury, this was ugly. You know, this was ugly from Bryant. It was ugly 2 days after a nice gritty road win at Brown. You know, it was ugly from the standpoint that they didn't shoot the ball well, that they turned it over 20 times, that they lost to a Dartmouth team that, quite frankly, I think they're better than. Yep. You know, I know Dartmouth beat Georgetown earlier this year. You know, but to the eye, they weren't all that impressive. They made 11 threes, which kept them in the game. But this is one that Bryant let get away. And I'm sure that, you know, when they watched the tape on Monday morning, you know, they saw opportunities there that they let slip. When you turn the ball over on 28% of your possessions, you frankly, you don't deserve to win. You know, and you got beat on a tying three-pointer at the end of regulation and then on a steal that turned into a layup with 0.9 seconds left. You know, and it was a tough one for Bryant. There's no question about it.
Yeah, this team has really struggled out of the gate. You know, you can chalk it up to whatever you want, transfers and team suspensions and, you know, guys not being ready to go. But, you know, this team is definitely hasn't met expectations so far, seven games through the season. And it's fine when you're Bryant because you're in the NEC. It's a one-bid league. And the out-of-conference is really just to sort of figure out who you are as a team, figure out roles, figure out, you know, certain game situations and who gets shots where and when and why.
That's right.
But it's just, it was a little disheartening after such a strong road win, a gutsy effort to beat Brown on Friday. Mm. To you know, you wanted to really bookend the weekend with a win at home against a team you're much better than in Dartmouth, and then get ready to go for next weekend when you face again another team with its toughest non-conference week of the year in Cincinnati and Houston. So
brutal.
Just disappointing, but Jared Grosso says this all the time. He will coach his team the same regardless of if shots aren't falling and regardless of if they're turning the ball over. They play 90, they go 95 miles an hour up and down the court the entire game. They play super fast, 20 turnovers against Dartmouth. Okay, you've got to reel that in. And then 8 for 32 from 3, they can pop a 19 for 32, you know, from 3 game just like that.
Mm-hmm.
They shoot 8 for 32. So you know, shots didn't fall there. Turnovers piled up. But at the end of the day, I think there is still that identity for Bryant. And I still think, they'll take some of these lessons through the lumps in the non-conference and take it into NEC play. But, the competition is going to be super, super tough this weekend.
For the folks who missed, Friday, missed Bryant Brown at the Pizzatola Center. It was a 2 o'clock tip, Friday afternoon, really entertaining game from a neutral perspective. Two teams who really got after it. You know, I know Mike Martin has said in the past, I have no interest in being like a JV game for URI and PC. This was a proper rivalry game, Maury. I like the fact that there was intensity there. I like the fact that Mike and Jared Grosso exchanged some words on the sidelines. I thought that was an interesting sidelight. Those are two guys who were competing hard, you know, who were showing their players something. That they were going to compete hard, that they were going to battle for them. You know, and I look at that game and I just saw Bryant being gritty down the stretch, getting some stops. You know, Brown, I think, only had one field goal or two field goals the last 8 minutes You know, Bryant really defended well down the stretch. They took Brown out of what they wanted to do. You know, against Dartmouth, you know, I look at Dartmouth and I think the last possession, you're up three, Dartmouth inbounds from the front court. You're trying to foul, and Dartmouth ran a really good play, actually. They ran a diagonal pass to a corner, and it was a touch pass out to Brendan Barry on the wing for a three, who got free off a back screen out high. It was a really nice design. You can find it online. It is on Twitter. I know I saw a clip of it right after the game. Really well-designed play that Dartmouth ran perfectly, and they got the ball to their best shooter, and he made the shot. You know, then you get into overtime, and you know, you're sort of chasing from the start of overtime. You get behind, you know, and can't necessarily get back, you know, and you miss a chance potentially to win it in overtime or force a second. You know, I look at Bryant Morey, and you mentioned the offense. You're 1-for-14 from three until you hit a couple late ones by Adam Alita and Charles Pride, and those ultimately ended up getting you 5 extra minutes. You know, but this is a team, Morey, that I think I look at the turnover numbers and I look at the one glaring position that they were going to have to replace going into this year, and that was point guard. And I don't necessarily think that they have identified a primary ball handler at this point. I watched Luis Hurtado in that game. He played 19 minutes. Dartmouth gave him some open shots that he declined because he is not a three-point shooter. He knows it, and Dartmouth knew it. I look at Tyler Brelsford only playing 6 minutes in that game. He was someone who got a lot of run early, struggled from the field, turned it over a little bit, and it seems like they're looking at other options there. I don't think Peter Kiss is a point guard, quite frankly. I think he's good off the ball. I think he's aggressive getting to the rim, but I don't necessarily want him to be my primary ball handler. I don't think he's efficient enough. And so I look at Bryant right now, sort of searching a little bit, and Jared mentioned this, that you know they need to work on themselves. They need to get themselves right, regardless of opponent. You know, he knows, as you mentioned just a minute ago, that you're playing in the NEC. It's a one-bid league. It matters what you do in conference play. If you can get some home games in that tournament, potentially host a conference tournament championship game on your home floor like they did last year. But I think they do have some questions to address in terms of how they want to play and some role definition there.
Oh, they do, no doubt. And it all starts with the point guard position. It's a shame Michael Green III isn't still here, because I think this team would have been, obviously would have been a lot better early on in the season. I think the ceiling is still relatively close to where it would have been if Michael Green was still there in Smithfield. But it's going to take a little more time than we expected. Jared Grosso, we know, will do his best to continue to find a solution for his team. It's a guy that's, you know, on Twitter at 5, 6 in the morning saying, you know, nobody's going to outwork me. And it's fun to see a little bit of, you know, sort of what makes him tick, what makes him go. And he's, you know, a little bit more public and open than the other coaches that we have here in the state on social media, that is. So,
now, wait, are you seeing those tweets live at 5, 6 in the morning?
No, I'm seeing them at about 7:38 in the morning when I get up.
God bless you.
But no, definitely not live there at in those wee hours of the morning. But
I'm not seeing either of those hours, to be fair. None of those. I am way asleep for much longer than that.
So we'll see what happens with Bryant. We'll see what happens. They're going to go, you know, do the best they can this weekend and then hunker down. And they still have a couple really tough non-conference opponents there before NEC play starts after this weekend.
These are two hideous road games, you know, two games that are a fact of life for a smaller conference team. Someone writes you a big check, you show up. They might fund, you know, one of your assistant coaches for a year. You know, your director of basketball ops, your video coordinator for a year. You know, you need to take $100,000 from Houston if you're Bryant. And you go to a team that was in the Final Four last year that is number one right now in KenPom defense, that will be a 20-plus point favorite against you at Hawfines Pavilion. Then you go to Cincinnati on Sunday. Cincinnati playing under Wes Miller in his first year there. Started 5-0, lost to Arkansas by 6, and then lost to Monmouth at home, a Monmouth team coached by King Rice, who was formerly, obviously has Providence connections, won their last five after losing to Charlotte in the opener. Some good wins there, too. Princeton, Cincinnati, obviously, on the road. St. Joe's on the road. They won by double digits. You know, so Monmouth, not a team to be trifled with. Cincinnati, not necessarily a bad loss there. So you're looking at Bryant, their toughest stretch of the year, obviously. Those two games in 3 days, Friday and Sunday. They come home to play New Hampshire, and then they're right back on the road again before and after exam break. You play Stony Brook, and then you play Cornell away. So a really relentless schedule here. I know Jared Grosso did this by design. He really wanted to test his guys. He felt like this team could handle this sort of thing. Two major tests going into Friday, and we'll see, how Bryant can take the week and sort of improve going into those. Because if they're not on their game, they don't bring their best to Houston or Cincinnati, those two could get ugly.
Ugly. Ugly. Quickly, too. Very quickly.
I mean, those are very good teams. We mentioned Brown's game against Bryant. Brown bounced back on Sunday with a nice road win at Quinnipiac. Sorry, Maury. 72-61. What do they call that place? So like the Bobcat's Den or something like that? They have some kind of catchy nickname for it.
The
I know it's the People's United Center.
It is the People's, yeah.
But blah, who cares about that?
How do the kids say it?
Yeah,
yeah. I think you could call it the Bobcat Den.
Anything catchy?
Not really. Not really. And you know what sucks? Just not enough success yet.
Yeah.
To really have any pull, have any type of nickname for that place.
So like BU played at Case Gym when I was there, and they used to call it the Roof because it was the top level of that athletic facility. It was like on the fifth floor.
Oh,
or whatever.
Cool.
So they called it the Roof.
Yeah.
It's kind of lame.
Yeah.
We're a hockey school. You know,
same with us.
Walter Brown Arena was the dog pound. That was much cooler.
Yeah.
Now they're very corporate and playing lovely at Gannis Arena, although the basketball team still plays at the Roof. And honestly, the hockey team should be back at Walter Brown the way they're playing right now. But that's my own private grievance with my own program at my alma mater. We don't do hoops. You know, it is what it is. Brown, a nice bounce back win at Quinnipiac. Keno Lilly Jr., Maury, we got to talk about this guy. He's got some game.
Yep.
This kid. Freshman comes in, 24 points all in the second half, 7 for 11 from the field. I think when you watch teams play, you could see, and we watch a lot of basketball. We see a lot of games. We see a lot of teams, a lot of players. Sometimes there's a guy or two, and it happens every once in a while, who just pops a little bit and you say, ooh, this guy's got a little something special. In some way, he's a little quicker than he should be. He's a little stronger than he should be. His shot is a little smoother. His release is a little quicker than you anticipate. Keno Lilly Jr., he's got some of that going on, doesn't he?
He does. And it's like a calm, confident swagger that almost strikes you as if he's been around for a while.
Mm.
I mean, we're talking a few weeks into your college career, and this is a kid that isn't overly emotional, just sort of plays with this great poise on the court and already has chemistry with his teammates. You can see that out on the court. So, man, what a great development for Brown. And you talk about point guard play for Bryant. I mean, Keno Lilly Jr., we talked about that coming into the season too with Brown. We knew what they had in the front court. We knew what they had with the wings, a couple transfers there. But, who is going to be the point guard of this team after Brandon Anderson left? And Keno Lilly Jr. has just come in and really surprised, been a great development. And he elevates this Brown ceiling really, really high when you talk about how this Brown team can compete in the Ivy, which is a guard-dominated league. But he looks ready for the challenge to go into league play in a couple weeks.
I think that's a good point you make, obviously. We had a good idea of what they would have in the front court, and now Tamanang Cho is back in the starting lineup. Working his way through that hip injury that limited him early. That's a great thing to see. David Mitchell and Jalen Gainey both had double-doubles in this game. Both worked hard on the boards. They each had 10 rebounds in this game, sort of that veteran strength inside that you would hope to see. But the guards were always going to dictate this team's ceiling and where they could go. And I think you look at two guys who are on the honor roll for the Ivy League this week, Keno Lilly and Dan Friday. Friday at 17 points against Bryant. He was Brown's leading scorer in that game. Someone who has asserted himself, can get to the rim, plays tough. You would expect that out of a kid from Detroit. So I think that Brown so far, you look at what they did in the Paradise Jam for three games, really struggled against Creighton. Good win over Bradley. 2-point loss to Colorado, who is a good team. You would have liked to have seen Brown steal that one.
Yeah.
But to watch them compete against a Pac-12 opponent like that and really hold them down defensively in the third game in 4 days, I think that said something about Brown's grit and maybe a little bit about their depth as well, because you look at past Brown teams that were maybe like 6, 7, 7.5 guys. I think in a third game in 4 days scenario, they might have wilted a little bit, and Colorado could have won that game by double digits. So I look at Brown going forward. They got UMass Lowell on Wednesday night. That's a home game for Tam and I Cho. That will be really nice for him to play in his hometown in Lowell. And then Sunday they have Sacred Heart coming in, a game that they'll be favored to win. Going into the rest of their non-conference schedule, I just wonder, Maury, you know, looking at Brown, they're 5-4 so far. Their losses are North Carolina, Creighton, Colorado, and then Bryant at home. The first three are power conference opponents. Bryant was a game that they certainly could have won. I think they're just about, where we might have expected them to be. They're certainly in the ballpark of where we might have expected them to be.
Yeah, I think the results have been what we expected. I think you look at some of the results and they've been a little bit closer in terms of North Carolina and Colorado, keeping those teams, to within one possession sort of down the stretch there very late in the final couple minutes. But you'd like to see a few more of these non-conference games before the conference schedule starts turn into wins for you. One thing I want to bring up, Bill, with this Brown team, and I understand it's a homecoming for Tamining Cho on Wednesday.
It's okay.
At UMass Lowell.
Go ahead.
At what point does resting him in the non-conference, getting him ready physically for the Ivy League, outweigh beating slop in the non-conference?
Yeah.
You're going to play Sacred Heart. You're going to play Merrimack. You're going to play Vermont. Okay. If you need to pick up these wins for whatever reason, Mike Martin wants to get to 20 wins, sure. You want to play him. You want your best chance. But this team has shown and proved that they can win, A, without him, and compete with top teams, ranked teams. And then B, hey, let's just get ready for Ivy League play. So Tamining Cho hasn't put the ball in the basket more than 3 times in a game this year. I mean, we've seen him score 4 or 5 baskets in a 4-minute stretch.
Yeah.
Countless times. This is a guy that's averaged double-figure points the last 2 games and is a focal point on the offensive end. At what point does rest outweigh the results? And I think you play him Wednesday. You have to play him Wednesday. They got the season stripped from him last year. He came back to Brown. You were, begging him to come back to Brown and not go to a Power 5 school so you could help. He could help you hopefully go win an Ivy League championship. I just don't know. I think you got to give his body a rest. And I think there's a perfect break right here in the schedule. So you play UMass Lowell and then he sits, in my opinion, Sacred Heart, Merrimack, Vermont, 12-5, 12-7, 12-10, and then there's a 2-week break for finals, and he comes back and still has a couple games to get right before Ivy League play. You're not just throwing him back into the mix, and you're at Penn on January 2nd. You have Rhode Island and you have Maryland December 22nd, and then 8 days later, Maryland. So he goes out and he tests his body on the 22nd, still has 8 days to recover. Then he goes out and plays against Maryland, has a few days to recover before Penn. So I really think at what point do you sit him and say, hey, listen, we need you strong when the calendar flips to January. Right now, beating Merrimack is not the goal.
Right. I think it's a delicate balance in terms of, yes, you want to get him rest. You want him to get right. You want him to be as close to 100% as you can for the Ivy League, because those are the games that obviously matter. You want to get in that top four. The other side of that is conditioning and his shooting touch, which you mentioned, hasn't necessarily been there. He had 21 rebounds against Bryant. So physically, in terms of activity level, I think he's there.
Yep.
Or getting closer, certainly. And I think you could argue, if you're Mike Martin, that the only way he's going to shoot it better is if he actually does get some live game action. Now, how much that should be, his minutes have been limited in some of these games. You're looking at Quinnipiac. He only played 22 minutes in that game. So he's not necessarily going out there and burying him for 30. 29 against Colorado is his season high so far. He had 21 rebounds in 26 minutes against Bryant, which was just ridiculous to watch. Yep. I kept checking the box score like it was a mistake. I was like, oh my God, he has how many? You know, is the most rebounds in a Bryant game since 1974-75. You know, so you're talking about a very special performance and the type of athlete who can do that. You know, because Ticho is physical, he's strong, but he's got a little quickness to him as well. You know, and I think that's something that they value, something that's made him versatile and you know, effective for them over time, that he can sort of operate on the wing, but he can also go in and play with the big guys too. You know, that's definitely a balance that they're going to be looking to strike, because you're right. They don't need to win these games at this point. I mean, it would be nice for their confidence. It would be good if they're playing well going into the Ivy League, but that's a one bid league. They're not an at-large team. I'm sure that they are managing him very closely. I know he said after the Bryant game the other day that he is feeling better than he did. You look at that finals period, those guys probably aren't going to go home for much more than a day or two.
Yep.
That's going to give their training staff time to work on him, you know, potentially get him a little closer. You also have that big gap there between the 22nd and the 30th, those two games that they play. I think that's URI and Maryland, correct? You said that?
Yep.
You know, so you've got a lot of time toward the end of December where he can get right. You know, and again, as we said about URI, these are conversations that coaches have behind closed doors
for
with
sure.
their staffs, with their training staffs. You know, difficult balance to hold. You know, Maury, wanted to finish up here with a couple women's notes. The URI women suffering their first loss of the year on Sunday, 64-52 to Long Beach State. They started 7-0 for the first time in program history. That seventh win was at Virginia, 80-70. Tammy Reese taking down her alma mater on the road.
Feeling good.
I mean, how could you not? URI beating an ACC team for just the second time in their history. Long Beach State, they really struggled in the third quarter. They got outscored 25-5. Committed 29 turnovers. You're not going to win many games doing that. They go to Holy Cross on Thursday and face Aluchi Azema, the former Moses Brown star, is up there with the Crusaders. They also go to Buffalo on Sunday. So a two-game road swing for the Rams women coming up. You know, but Maury, looking at them at 7-1, there was some thought that potentially in a matchup of unbeatens with Long Beach State, they could have won that game. Potentially, they could have received some votes.
Sure.
In the AP Top 25, which, you know, we're having these conversations about the URI women that we haven't necessarily had before. It's heady territory.
Yeah, it is. This is a team that definitely deserves that national attention. You know, assuming they can go out and win a couple more of these non-conference games. Buffalo, that's coming up, obviously, is going to be a tough one. That's a team that's reached the Sweet 16 before. As a mid-major, but you've got good tests. Hartford's always been solid, and BU as well. So Maine too. Maine has sort of been the class of the America East too for the last, you know, better 5-7 years. Obviously, Richard Barron was the head coach there. He's now on the men's side. But yeah, I think it was a really good non-conference slate that Tammy Reese put together, a competitive slate. And when you can go out and you can beat an ACC team on the road, sure, Virginia's definitely a cellar dweller when it comes to looking at the ACC on the women's side of things, but that's what the really good mid-major teams do.
Correct.
To the low Power 5 teams on the women's side.
Correct.
And I've brought this up before, and my alma mater in Quinnipiac was and sort of is still a mid-major wagon, and they would go out and beat you know, the Vanderbilt football equivalent of a women's team, you know, in the Power
SEC,
5
in the SEC, right?
Exactly.
Bottom half Big East, something like that.
For sure. And they went out and they beat Providence, you know, on the road, as an example right there. So,
right.
Rhode Island's got everything that's they're definitely ahead of the curve. We knew, you know, there were big expectations on this team coming into the year, and they've sort of checked off all the boxes. You would have liked to have that Long Beach State game back on your side and bring that one home as a win, but right now Tammy Reese's squad is rolling, and they should roll right into A-10 play.
Quick impact by the grad transfers here. Des Elmore had 22 against Virginia. Chanel Williams had 19, 14 for 15 from the line. Those are vital, obviously. You know, so you're looking at the Rams, you know, in good shape here at 7-1, with some tough non-conference games coming up. You know, three on the road, two at home before they face Dayton on New Year's Day to open up A-10 play. Maury, the first team in the state to play conference games will be the PC women. And that will be on Friday, which I mean, I can't believe that that's already happening. PC hosting Villanova and Georgetown this weekend. They host Hartford on Wednesday before they jump into conference play, three games in 5 days. PC coming off a win over Monmouth, 64-34 at home. They improved to 2-4 on the season. Had an overtime loss to Yale, which they were competitive in. URI, they were strong early and then faded over the last three quarters. Got beat by UMass at home, and UMass is one of those teams you mentioned, a mid-majors type team. Really good program in the A-10. You know, they've been up there with Fordham and Dayton in recent years. You know, so that was a good challenge for the Friars that they struggled with. But a good win over Monmouth. You would hope that they could take care of Hartford at home. Hartford is a team that lost at home to Brown. You know, so Providence will be favored in that game. But then obviously just jumping into conference play, Villanova, Kylie Swider will be coming home. Younger sister of Cole Swider, who's now at Syracuse. Go Orange. You're welcome.
Go Orange.
you know, but that'll be nice to see Providence giving us a little conference juice here very early in December. Before, I used to be very traditional about that. I would say, you know, just play all your non-conference games and then play your league games after that. I'm kind of buying into the idea of an appetizer now.
I
don't necessarily hate it.
For sure.
As much as I did.
How about those, like, late season non-conference games we used to have, men and women's side, like mid-February, late February, the old bracket buster games.
Ooh, that's right.
You know, we're talking 10 years ago, 15 years ago and beyond, but why not, you know? Or even have some type of wrinkle in the schedule like we had last year where, oh, okay, a game gets canceled or you just have a weekend open and you get to schedule whoever you want last minute. I think it adds to the schedule. Why not? Play conference games early, not the first game of the season like we saw the ACC do a couple years ago. When Virginia went to Syracuse for the first game, or you know, you have a game that will hold a lot of weight, you know, for your resume down the stretch, and you're forced to play that on November 7th or whatever the day would be. But yeah, why not? Why not play a conference game early December, mid December, or a non-conference game in February? You know, to take a break from teams that you see all the time. So I'm all for it. Why not?
I am a fan. I look forward to it. We wish the PC women well as they jump into their Big East schedule. You know, obviously everyone's got one eye, or at least I do, as a media member, on January 30th, where PC will play at the Dunkin' Donuts Center against UConn. A rare Dunkin' Donuts Center date for the PC women, but when the monolith comes to town, I suppose they demand a bigger stage in Alumni Hall.
I think so.
And I think the PC's athletic department is looking at that as a chance to perhaps monetize a little bit with the Huskies horde coming in.
Yep.
I would imagine you might be there that night.
I would think
If it's clear.
I would think so.
Actually,
if the Patriots aren't still in the playoffs.
That night, I take that back. I think it's an 11 a.m. tip on a Sunday.
Oh, wow.
Okay. You know, so get your brunch in downtown Providence and or maybe an early breakfast.
Go check out that game, and then the Patriots might play in the... What would that be now? The NFL schedule's got me all
January 30th?
Up,
would those be conference championship games? Super Bowl's the 13th.
Right, that normally would be the bye week going into the Super Bowl, but now this year it's conference championship.
They pushed it back a week?
Yep.
Because of the 17-game schedule, right?
Exactly,
right.
Yep.
Maury, since you're a lot cooler than me and more culturally relevant, give the folks a breakfast spot in Providence.
You're putting me on the spot.
Before that 11 a.m.
Wow. I go old school. I like the traditional diner, you know, big plate. I like Wayland Diner.
Nice. There you go.
Which is me. I know it was Danny Amendola's favorite spot. He's got his picture up there when he was a member of the Patriots and lived in Providence.
Right. He lived on Benefit Street, didn't he, right? He was an Eastside guy?
Yes.
Yeah.
He was an Eastside guy. I don't know exactly where he lived, but definitely was a big Wayland Diner guy. So, yeah, Wayland Diner I think is a really good spot. There's other ones. There's more, you know. More hip, you know, brunch spots where they've got the, you know, they've got the parfaits and I want the big French toast. I want the stack of five pancakes. I want the side of three scrambled eggs. Like, I just want the traditional, bring me four or five plates. Let me be there with two or three friends and we just sort of all split it. Not this like avocado toast with the salmon on top and the little everything sesame bagel seasoning drizzled on there.
Oh,
That's a little too much for me. That's a little too bougie.
Maury, going get off my lawn
I
here.
I like the old school brunch. I like the old school brunch. Give me a muffin. Give me a good tall glass of orange juice. And yeah, that's sort of my my brunch spin.
If you have good chocolate milk, I'm in.
Perfect.
That's my old favorite.
Exactly.
I drift back to that every once in a while because my nephew has it. I'm just like, oh my God, give me that right now. I want some too. All right, Maury, thank you very much, as always, for coming in and making some time. You know, we look forward to the games, particularly on Wednesday. We've got some really good ones coming up, and we will be back later this week for the Armageddon that is PCURI. Thank you all very much.